So Parshas Lech Lecha, page 54.
That's the immigration
Parsha. Immigration Parsha, I guess so. And it was a test then and it's a test now,
of
right?
Yeah,
exactly. So Parshas Lech Lecha, just a quick overview. I was going to make a copy, but I didn't get around to it. So we have, of course, the test of Lech Lecha, Hashem telling Abraham Avinu to go to Eretz Yisrael. He arrives there. We have then the famine. He has to go to Egypt. This is the whole story, the challenge with Sarah. Comes back up, split with Lot. Then we have the whole story with the four kings versus the five kings, a complicated story. Followed by the saving of Lot, because Lot got captured by Sodom, got captured by one of the kings, and he had to rescue him, and Avraham Avinu rescued him. Followed by the Bris Ben Absarim, the famous covenant, the famous vision that Avraham Avinu had, where it was told to him that his descendants would be slaves in a foreign land, but afterwards they'd be redeemed, and he would ultimately inherit the land of Eretz Israel. So that was his promise, and then after that, Aaron Avinu is commanded with the mitzvah of Bris Milah, of circumcision, and also his name and Sarah's name are changed from Avram to Avraham, from Sarai to Sarah. But for today, we're going to focus on two things, just a little bit of the beginning, and then talk about a general theme to do with the three parshas of Bereishis, Noach, and Lech Lecha. So, Parshas Lech Lecha, again on page 54, begins with Avraham Avinu at 75. We already know Avraham Avinu, a few psukim beforehand, in the end of Parshas Noach. And it starts with the first time that Avraham Avinu is actually given a communication, a direct communication from Hashem, with a direct mitzvah that's recorded in the Chumash. So it says the following. Let's just read some of the psukim. It says, Vayomer Hashem al Avram, and Hashem said to Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimeladetcha me'beis avicha. Go lecha. Lecha has many meanings, we'll soon see. We've talked about this before as well. Lecha means for you, to you, because of you, for your benefit. But go me'artzecha from your land, u'mimeladetcha from your birthplace, u'mibeis avicha to the house of your father. To the land that I will show you. God, I will make you into a big nation. I will bless you. And I will make your name great. And it will be for a blessing. I will bless those that bless you. Those who curse you, I will curse. And all the families of the earth will be blessed within you, using your name, and so on and so forth. So what happens? Ve'elech Avram Avinu went, kasher diber elav Hashem, as Hashem had spoken to him. Ve'elech itoy Loit, and Loit went with him. That's his nephew. Loit was his nephew, the son of Haran. Just to fill in the story there, towards the end of last week's parasha, we have the Rashi, not explicit in the psukim, but it's cryptic, and we know about it from Rashi and the Midrashim. The first test of Avraham Avinu was the test of Ur Kastim, when he was challenged by Nimrod to serve idols, and if he insisted on his monotheistic beliefs, he would be thrown into the furnace. He was thrown into the furnace and miraculously survived. It was a huge heating furnace, and Avraham Avinu miraculously, Alpines, was saved. Avraham Avinu had a brother called Haran. It's an interesting medrash. Haran wasn't sure. He wasn't sitting on the fence. He doesn't know Avodah Zarah, pagan worship is the way to go. Belief in God, he's not sure. So he figures, you know what, he'll wait and see who comes out on top. Right? So he waited to see. He didn't express any belief until Avraham Avinu was saved. Once Avraham Avinu was saved, then they asked Haran, so whose side are you on? He said, I'm Avraham Avinu's side. So they threw him also into the furnace and he wasn't saved. Right? The miracle of being saved wasn't for people who were sitting on the fence, it was people who had the conviction of belief, like Avraham Avinu, to believe in the one God. But Haran had a son called Loit. And kind of Avraham Avinu sort of adopted him, like he he took him under his wing. So Lot went with him. After, it looks like. Oh, I don't know. No. No, maybe not. Maybe before. He was a young child. I'm not sure exactly. Well, a different midrashim. The midrash, the accepted midrash, the famous midrash is that he recognized Hashem's presence when he was three, but then he was held in jail by his father for a while, and then Nimrod was later, sometime later. Yeah. Okay. Just have a look at a couple of things here in the psukim. First of all, if you have a look at the pasuk we just learned, pasuk base, second pasuk, it says, "Ve'eschol agoy gadol, make into a big nation. Vamerecha, I will bless you." Bless you means, with, as Mepharshim explained, with material things, with wealth, with whatever. I'll make your name great. Ve'yei bracha, and you'll be a blessing. So what does it say again? Ve'yei bracha, you'll be for a blessing. What's the difference between the first blessing and the last blessing, right? So the Ben Ish Chai offers a few interesting insights. It says like this. First of all, there's a rule that's brought in Gemara that Ein HaBracha Shorui Elo B'Dover HaSomoi Min Ha'ayim, which means bracha always rests on something which is hidden from the eye. Privacy brings bracha. Something that's flaunted, something that's public, often attracts negative energy. It can attract the concept of Ayin Hara, and so on and so forth. So Hashem says like this, I'm going to make you into a great nation. That's a promise for the future. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you with wealth. I'm going to bless you with lots of things. I'm also going to, I'm going to make your name great, which means up to now you weren't famous. You will become famous. You'll become well known. Are you going to ask me if I'm going to become well known? That's going to undermine the previous word. It's going to undermine the bracha, because then I'm going to be public, and publicity could undermine the bracha. So Hashem says, no, even though I'm going to bless you, I'm going to make your name great, and nevertheless, the bracha will remain. That's why it's a second time. Right? That's one insight he says. The other insight he says as follows. It's a different bracha, he says. The first bracha is material. Well, the second bracha is a different bracha. What's the bracha? So he points out an interesting thing. He says, if you take Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, those three patriarchs, you put all the letters together, you'll see the 13 letters, the numerical value of Echad. Right? If you take Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, you'll see the same thing, also 13 letters. Put them all together, it's 13 letters. Right? Interesting. Sarah, I'm just learning a Gemara recently where the Gemara talks about the fact that we only call three people our fathers and four people our mothers. And it doesn't necessarily mean biological fathers and mothers, because the Gemara says not everyone comes from Rachel, not everyone comes from Leah. Some people come from neither, actually. They come from Bilhah and Zilpah. But nevertheless, it's the prominence, it's the spiritual importance. So it's not just physical mothers and fathers, it's also spiritual. Am Yisrael is based on Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Some of us come from various different Shvatim, but they're not called the fathers of Klal Yisrael, or mothers of Klal Yisrael. Anyway, so it's 13 letters Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, 13 letters Sarah, Rivka, Leah. The combination of both is 26, which we know is the numerical value of the holiest name of Hashem, Yud and Hey, Vav and Hey, Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yud Kei Vav Kei has the gematria of 26. However, that only works after Avraham Avinu's names was changed, from Avram to Avraham, because until then it was 12 letters, not right. I mean, if Avraham's name would have been Avram, they would only make 12 letters and not 13, and this concept wouldn't work. So he says, this is the pshat in the pasuk. I'm going to make it a great nation. I'm going to bless you with material wealth. I'm going to make your name great. I'm going to make your name, actual name, bigger. And because I'm going to make your actual name bigger, the hey bracha, it's going to be a big bracha, because the avos and the imois together then will make 26. But it'll only happen through making your name great. That's what the Ben Ish Chai says. Another concept from the Ben Ish Chai, which I want to share with you. He's got some amazing things on Chumash. I have the Ben Ish Chai at home for the funny circumstance, actually. I feel bad because I actually have to tell the person one day. When I was many years ago in Bet Yosef, so I wanted to get a whole bunch of Sephardi books, primarily one of them being the Svarim of the Ben Ish Chai. So a good friend of mine lent me the actual sefer called Ben Ishchai, and also two beautiful sfarim on Chumash from the Ben Ishchai. They're called, one's called Aderes Eliyo, and the other one's, I forgot what it's called, plus some other shalos and tshuvas and stuff like that. He's now since moved to Israel, he's forgotten that he lent me the sfarim, but I have to actually tell him that I still have them, but I still use them. I'm sure you won't mind. I hope you won't mind. Anyway, I'll have to tell him that actually I have his sfarim. I have to give them back at one stage and get my own. Anyway, but they're beautiful sfarim. So he says the following on the first pasuk. It says, "Lech lecha me'atzcha me'atzcha me'savicha elo aretz asher arecha," to the land that I will show you. He says, "What's this interesting? What's this concept? Arecha, I will show you." Right. So the simple pshat is that it was part of the test. Hashem didn't actually tell him exactly where he's going. He let him a bit in the dark. So he kept on leading him. When he got there, he said, Hashem said, "This is the land." Right. He brings another concept. He says an interesting thing. He says, what's the idea of Areka? He says the following. He says, there's a famous concept. If you learn Gemara, often when the Gemara quotes a brisa, when it quotes a teaching from previous Talmudic sages, it often introduces the teaching with the words, Toshma, come and listen. It's like an introductory to a Torah thought. Come and listen. And then it goes on to say, this rabbi said that, and so on and so forth. In the Zohar, it's actually different. When the Zohar wants to introduce a new idea, it doesn't say Toshma, it says Tochazi. Come and see. Come and see. And it goes on with the thought, right? So why in the Gemara it says Toshma, and in the Zohar it says Tochazi? Okay? So the simple explanation is because the Gemara was all learned by heart. Now it's written down, but when it was originally taught and discussed, it was all Baal Peh. It's called the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? Oral Torah. In fact, the Gemara we have today is really just minutes. It's minutes of discussion that took place in the Beis Medrash. Therefore, if you learn Gemara, you'll know that it's a very complicated text because it's not actually a written text. You're reading an oral discussion. Right? That's why sometimes all over the place, sometimes it goes from one thing to another. Sometimes the discussion appears to be disjointed because it is disjointed for a written text, but not for an oral text. For an oral discussion, it's actually a really, really rigorous discussion, but as a written text, it's not such a structured written text. You wouldn't write text like that, right? Because originally it wasn't written, originally it was all discussed, Baal Peh, by heart. So therefore, in the Gemara, when someone wants to introduce a new idea, he says, Toshma, come and listen, because they can listen, right? Whereas the Zohar, we know if you look in the Zohar, which was recorded by Rav Shimon, by Yochai, and his Talmidim mainly, actually he commanded before he passed away that it should be written down and hidden, and it was kept from the public for a very, very long time until the Zohar was revealed. But it was actually a written text. It was recorded specifically by instruction. And therefore it says, Tochazi, come and listen, come and look. Look inside the text. Right? So the Zohar introduces a new concept, says Tochazi. Incidentally, I don't know if I ever shared this with you. I once saw a beautiful thing about the word Chazi, which means to see, or Chazon, also means vision, right? Why in Shul a Chazon is called a Chazon, you know? It's interesting how words develop. Sometimes some words develop and they have nothing to do with the original meaning. Right? Today, Chazon is a standard word. It's the cantor, it's the person who leads the services. So much so that over ages it's become a whole word with a noun, with it's conjugated. You have chazan is the person, chazanut is the type of singing they sing, and so on and so forth, right? But actually originally it's a whole different word. In fact, in the Gemara, the original word chazan means someone who is in charge, like the gabba was called the chazan. The chazan was never called the chazan in the original tefillah structure. In the original tefillah structure, the chazan was called the shliach tzibur, which makes more sense. He's the representative of the congregation. Shliach means emissary, tzibur, the congregation. He represented the tzibur, right? So I once saw an explanation why we call the shliach tzibur chazan, and it came from the time when the tefillah was structured, and eventually they started, it was all by heart originally. That's why davening was so complicated. And a lot of people didn't know how to daven, had to just listen to the whole thing, right? The Gemara talks about Rosh Hashanah, where it's an unusual Shemana Esra, unusual Amidah, therefore most people don't know it by heart, so therefore they have to just listen to the Chazan, and so on and so forth. Eventually they made a Siddur. Reb Amram Gaon was the first one to actually write down a Siddur, but that was a handwritten manuscript. It wasn't the printing press came much later, hundreds of years later. So when the original Siddur was made, it was made just handwritten manuscript, and there were very, very few copies. And the way it used to be in a shul was only the shliach tzibur would be the one to have they only had one siddur per shul normally. So the shliach tzibur, the chazan, would have the one because he'd be the one to lead the services. So it was important that he saw and he was familiar with what's going on. And because of that, they got to call the chazan, because chazan means to see. So he was the only one that could see the davening. Everyone has to hear it, and he could see it. That's why cantors became known as chazanim. Anyway, just a bit of interesting history. So the Ben Ish Chai says the same thing. That's why the symbol of Shat is, in the Gemara we say, Tosh Shema, come and listen. But in Zohar we say, Toh Chazi, because it's a written text. He says, that's a simple reason, but there's a deeper reason, he says. And he says that the Gemara, primarily the Gemara we learn, the Talmud we learn, was written in Chutz Laretz. It's an amazing work, but it was written in the diaspora, in outside of Eretz Yisrael. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Torah, the Gemara says, Ain't Torah Keturah Eretz Yisrael. There's no Torah like a Torah of Israel, because the Kedusha, the holiness of Eretz Yisrael and the Shechina, especially in times when there were people that could sense this more than we can today, everyone can sense it on some level, but talking about an intense level, there's a certain lack of clarity in outside of Eretz Yisrael. However, in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Eretz Yisrael, which is the land of Kedusha, the land of holiness, the land where there's the presence of the Shechina is much stronger, there's much more clarity. That's why he says like this. The Talmud, which was mainly written in Chutz La'aretz, the expression that's used is Toshma, come and listen. Because we know that listening versus seeing is lack of clarity versus clarity. Right? When you see something, it's absolutely clear. You can't dispute it, you can't challenge it. Seeing. You're seeing is believing, it's clear. You know what it is and finish. When you have to be described something orally, you have it, but you don't have it as clear. Right? So the clarity isn't as strong. So therefore, outside of Eretz Yisrael, when the Torah was taught in the Gemara, therefore the expression is Toshma, come and listen. Listen is not as clear as seeing. Whereas the Zohar, he said, was written in Eretz Yisrael. The esoterics of Torah, the Pnimius of Torah, the secrets of Torah, there was much more exposed, much more clear, and therefore the expression there is Tochazi. He gives that as an introduction to explain the Pasuk. That's what the Pasuk means. When Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, Ma'atzcha Ma'atzcha Ma'atzcha, and go, where are you going to go? El Ha'aretz Asher Ar'eka, to the land that I will show you. Doesn't mean I will show you which land it is. Go to the land Asher Ar'eka, where I will, Ar'eka comes to the word Re'ia, where I will give you sight, I will give you clarity. That's the land of Eretz Yisrael. That's how he described the land of Israel, to go to the land Asher Ar'eka, where I will give you Re'ia, I will give you the concept of vision, of clarity, of able to see things rather than just hear them. Incidentally, on this pasuk, the idea of Lech Lecha, because Lech Lecha is a problematic phrase, the Baal HaTurim says, Lech Lecha, the two words, Lech Lecha has the gematria of 100, right? Lech is 30, Chof is 20, so it's 50, 50, 50, 100. Hashem was hinting to him that, go, Lech Lecha, and you'll be blessed. And he's hinting that when he's 100, he will have a son, right? Or, another way to understand it, he says, is Lech Lecha, go, I'm giving you another 100 years. Avraham Avinu was 75 at the time. Go to Eretz Yisrael, and Avraham Avinu passed away, you know, when he was 175. So when Hashem gave him the mitzvah of Lech Lecha, he had another 100 years to go, and that's hinted in the word Lech Lecha. Okay. The Kli Yakar, however, has a very interesting idea on the concept of what the word Lecha means. And he says the following. He says, generally, what are the three ideas, and a lot of Mefarshim talk about this, of go me'artzecha, from your land, from your birthplace, and from your father's house, and in that order. Because Mefarshim will ask, it's the wrong order. When a person leaves, the first thing he leaves is his family's home. The second thing he leaves is his birthplace. The third thing he leaves is his land. Yet in the Pasuk, it's the other way around. It says, go from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's house. So he says, as many Mefarshim do, he says like this. A person is attached to three things. His land, his country, his birthplace, and his family, right? And to move away from either of them, he said the pressure of emigration is hard, right? It's always hard. So when Hashem told him to move away from Eretz Yisrael, away from Haran to go to Eretz Yisrael, Hashem broke it to him slowly, says the Kli Yakar. He said, I'm going to ask you one thing that's difficult, and then more difficult, and even more difficult. He says, the first thing that I want you to do is leave your land. That's not as difficult. A person is not as attached to their land as everything else. So the country, okay, the country is one of the country. For a bigger ask is ma'atzcha. Not only you have to leave your country, but you have to leave your birthplace. That's a harder thing. So this test means not just leaving a country, but means leaving your birthplace. And it doesn't only mean leaving your birthplace, but it also means leaving your father's home, your family home. That's the greatest thing. That's the most difficult. However, says the Kli Yakar, I think this is what the Kli Yakar means, he says that a person is attached to a fourth thing, and that's himself, in a positive way, the real self. So Hashem says like this, Lech Lecha, the reason that you're going to be able to do this test, the reason you're able to move away from the things that hold you back, the things that influence you, the things that could interfere with your growth, is because Lech Lecha, I'm sending you to a place where you will be able to go to your real true self, your identity, your neshama, your infinity, your koyach that you have to rise above all of those things in life that influence us. That's Lech Lecha. That's what it means, go, because the word Lech Lecha is a problematic word. Lech Lecha means go to you. So he says go to you means go to your real essence, which is Eretz Yisrael, and more specifically, Hara Maria, the Temple Mount, where we know, by the way, the Rambam tells us that when Hashem formed Adam Arishan, right, as the Bereishis tells us 2 weeks ago, that when Adam was created, it wasn't like every other creation that Hashem said, let there be this, let there be that. The human being was created, but differently. He was created from a clay that already existed. Hashem took earth and formed it into the form of a human being, and then vayipach ba'apav nishmas chaim, and then he blew into his nostrils a breath of life. Says the Rambam, where did Hashem take that clay from? From the place of the Mizbeach, from Temple Mount, from the place where the Beis HaMikdash stood, specifically from the place where the Mizbeach, the altar, was destined to stand. As the Rambam tells us, that Chazal tell us, odo mimokam kaparosoi nivro, the person was created from the place of his atonement, from his correction, from his rectification, right? So the Kli Yakar says, points out that if you see later, the same expression Lech Lecha is used by something else at the end of next week's parasha, by the Akedah, when Hashem tests Avraham Avinu with the ultimate test, right? And he tells him to go and take his only son to a mountain, to the Hara Maria, and offer him up as a korban. He also used the word Lech Lecha there. He says Hashem, spoke to Avraham Avinu, and he says Lech Lecha l'Eretz HaMaria, go to you, to the Hara Maria, to the Pentateuch. Why? Same idea. Because he was going to the real essence there. There he was going to where he was created from. He was going to where it all happened. He was going to his root, his origin. Says the Kli Yakar, that's a pshat in this pasuk as well. Lech Lecha, Hashem says, go to yourself, which will allow you, will facilitate that journey away from your birthplace, from your country, and from your father's home. Okay. Before we go to the general thing, I want to just point out one more thing. Beautiful idea that the Ishbitzer says, the Me'ashi Loyach. If you have a look, just turn over the page, on page 56. Points out, when Avraham Avinu listened to the test, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he set up a shop there, if you have a look at the pasuk, Ches, verse 8, or even verse Zion, verse 7. It says, "Vayera Hashem al Avram." Hashem appeared to Avram. "Vayera when he said to him, 'Lezaracho eten es oretz hazois, I'll give to your children this land.'" Even Shom Yisbech, and Avram Avinu built an altar, Hashem aniru elov, to the God who had appeared to him. "Vayatem Yisham ahara," and then he moved away. "Mekedem beisil beit olay," pitched a tent. "Beisal miyom ve'amikedem." And then Vayivin Shom Mizbeach Lashem, he again built a Mizbeach. Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, and he called in the name of Hashem. Why did he build a Mizbeach? So the Jews says an interesting thing, and he builds it into a word that comes in the next page. Actually, let's just do that first. I'll show you. Have a look on page 58. Right? Because what happened after Avraham Avinu came to Mitzrayim, the whole story of Sarah, there was a famine and he had to go down to Egypt. Sarah was going to be captured, Sarah was almost captured. The whole story says, you say my sister, not my wife, and so on and so forth. Eventually, Hashem plagued the house of Paroi. Paro sends Avraham Avinu away with tremendous riches. So it says like this. Look at Pasuk Aleph on page 58, verse 1. Vayal Avram Mitzrayim. Avram went up from Mitzrayim. Hu v'ishtoi chalashaloi, him, his wife, everything that he had. V'loit imoi. And Loit with him also, because Loit went down to Mitzrayim with him, came up from Mitzrayim. Hanegbo to the south. Then it says, Avram koveid mo'oid. Avram was extremely, the word koveid means heavy. He was loaded by mikneh, by kesef, by zov, with flock, with silver and with gold. Meaning he was very rich, because he was richly sent away. Not the way he came down, he was richly sent away. Then if you have a look at, just skip a pasuk, if you have a look at pasuk, hey, verse 5, it says, V'gam l'loit, and also Loit, ha-hoylech es Avram, who went with Avram, ha-yotsoin u-bokar v'oil, he also had sheep, cattle, and tents. And then it says they couldn't remain together. They broke out a bit of politics between Loit's shepherds and Avraham Avinu's shepherds. Essentially, Avraham Avinu suggested that they split, they divide, and Loit chose a very pasturous land, the city of Sodom, which was a wicked city, and nevertheless, Loit even chose to be there, and he slipped as a result, spiritually speaking. So the Ishusa points out, interesting thing, what's the expression by Avraham Avinu that says he was covered, he was heavy? Why does it have to say that? Why does it just say he had a lot of wealth, right? And by Loit, it doesn't say he was heavy. It just says Loit had also a lot of sheep, flock, and tents, and stuff like that. It doesn't say covered, it doesn't say he was laden, he was loaded up, so to speak, right? He says what happened was like this. He says, in the beginning of the parasha, we read about two tests. This was the beginning of Avraham Avinu's spiritual journey, essentially, right? As we'll see later, we know that a big difference between what happened to Avraham Avinu till now and from Lech Lecha is until now, Avraham Avinu was on his own. He discovered Hashem on his own. For now, Hashem was guiding him, and he was sending on this journey, physically and also spiritually, to become the father of Klal Yisrael. Right? So he gave him two tests, going down to Israel, and then the test of Egypt. Right? He says, to really understand those two tests, it works like this. He says, what are the two tests? He says, the one is a test of Anius, and the one is a test of Ashirus. Meaning, one is a test of poverty, and the other one is a test of wealth. We know that both things are actually tests. Right? Avraham Avinu goes to Eretz Yisrael. When he comes there, he actually doesn't have much. Yes, he has a promise from Hashem that ultimately will be for his benefit, and he'll be laden with wealth, but he doesn't have. Right? He comes down without it. Comes down with nothing, actually. Avraham Avinu realizes that's the essence of the test. And that's why at the beginning, what does Avraham Avinu do? He builds a mizbech. Vayikra b'shem Hashem, and he calls out to the name of Hashem. Why does he call out to the name of Hashem? That he shouldn't be affected by this test. The Gemara says the test of poverty is a very strong test. Anius, poverty, when a person is poverty stricken, it distracts the person. It makes the person completely distracted away from himself and away from Hashem. It's a very difficult thing. We know the story in the Gemara about Hillel. Hillel passed the test of poverty with flying colors. Right? He had nothing to eat almost. He had nothing to pay for, to go into the Beis HaMedrash. And he managed to get in and he managed to learn Torah. To the point that the Gemara says that after 120, when Hashem wants to know why, if we learn Torah or not, we won't be able to bring in excuses. If a person brings the excuse of poverty, they're going to bring him Hillel. Because there was no one as poor as Hillel, but as a test. Right, you know the whole story I'm talking about. He couldn't get it. He had one coin, he had split it in half. Half a coin gave to buy food for his family. The other half a coin he paid to get into the Beis HaMedrash. There was a fee, there was an entrance fee. And then one day he didn't have. So he came to the Beis HaMedrash, they wouldn't let him in. He wasn't so well known at that time. He was a guy came from, he was born in Israel, but he went to Bavel. He came from Bavel. They didn't know who he was. He wanted to learn by Shema and Naphtali. So he got in. There was a shomer, a guard at the door, a strict guy. And he wouldn't let anyone in to the Beis HaMedrash without the entrance fee. So he didn't know what to do. So he went on the roof to hear the shir. And there was a skylight there. And he lay down and put his ear and he started to hear the shir. In the meantime, it started to snow. And in the morning, and he heard the shir the whole night that way. In the morning, when they expected it to become light, because the sun used to shine through the sunlight, it was dark in the shul. And Shmai Naftalim didn't understand why. And they looked up and they see a person there. And they went up and they revived him and he was saved. Why? He was totally oblivious to it, because he was so into the shir and he was so listening to the Torah, he didn't realize it was snowing, and then until he froze, right? Then they realized that he was a great man, they gave instructions, let him in without any entrance fee, and he didn't have to pay for getting into the shir anymore. Okay. So that's Hillel. But it's a very, very strong test. A person can be very easily drawn down with the worries and the anxiety of being poverty stricken, and Avraham Avinu had that test. So he comes and he says, "Vayikra b'shem Hashem," he calls out to Hashem that he should be what's called a sameach b'chelki. He davened to Hashem that he should be happy with his lot and he shouldn't be distracted by poverty and he should pass this test. Good. So Hashem blesses him. Then he goes to Mitzrayim and he comes back completely the opposite. He comes back very rich. So he says, this is the words of the pasuk, a very beautiful idea. He says, Avraham Avinu realizes this is the second test. And that's why it says, Avram koved ma'od. Avram was very heavy. He took this as a load. For him it was a load. It was a second test. He said, okay, I passed the first test, but how do I know I'm going to pass this test? He took the wealth that he received from Hashem as a heavy load, as something that was bothering him, something that he saw as a threat, potentially, to his service of Hashem, to his connection to Hashem. That's why by Loit, he didn't see it as a load. That's what it doesn't say, Kovet. Two psukim later, it says, V'gam l'loit. Loit was also wealthy, but doesn't use the expression Kovet. It wasn't heavy. Why? Because Loit didn't see it as a test. And he doesn't say this, but this is the secret. When you don't see something as a test, then it damages you. Right? When do tests not damage you, not affect you? When you see them as tests. You see what I'm saying? Because when you see them as tests, you deal with them, you daven to Hashem, you should pass the test. You see it as an opportunity for an experience of being uplifted and becoming a better person from it. In fact, the word for test we know in Hebrew is nisoyan, right? Which means test, but also means nes, which means to lift up. So Avraham Avinu sees it as a test. He's aware of its potential problem. When you're aware of the potential problem, you deal with the problem. So that's why Avraham Avinu kaved ma'od. Avraham Avinu was heavy, so he survived. Loit didn't see it as a test, and Taka didn't. Taka affected him. He went to Sodom and it became part of Sodom. All right, we know from Parshas Vayera, certain things were ingrained in him that he couldn't get rid of. So he was still hospitable, and he risked his life to entertain the malachim, the angels, when they got there. But essentially, he became like Sodom. Not only became like Sodom, he became big machin in Sodom. Later on, next week's parsha, we read that he became a shofet. He became like a judge. One of the hierarchy in the city of Sodom. Why was it affected spiritually? Why? Because he didn't see it as a test. He got this wealth from Mitzrayim, he didn't see it as a test. It doesn't say Kovid, but Avraham Avinu says Kovid, so he was able to deal with it. Says the Israelites said that's the beginning of the journey. The beginning of the journey, Hashem gives him this both tests to see if he can handle either. Test of poverty, the test of wealth. He passes both tests, now he's on the way to a life of proper spiritual growth to become the leader of Klal Yisrael. That's the first part. Part two, I want to just share with you an idea that has to do with the three parshas of Bereishis, Shemos, and Noach. Bereishis, Noach, and Lech Lecha, sorry. Because it's an interesting observation we need to make. If you go back a little bit, page 26. You know, Bereishis and Noach are like this. Bereishis deals with the first 10 generations of existence, from Adam till Noach. Right? Noach starts a new era till Avraham Avinu. But the way it's structured in the Chumash is interesting. On the one hand, Bereishis is a fantastic parsha. It's creation of the world, beautiful stuff. But then at the end, we get it sours a bit, right? So we say, we look at the beginning of 26, at the end of 26, page 26 says, Vayara Hashem, Hashem saw, ki rabba roi sa'odam ba'oris, that there was a lot of evil in the world, people have evil intentions, evil inclinations, Vayanochem, Hashem, Hashem changes his mind. He like was upset, ki osa sa'odam, he regretted creating the person, and so on and so forth. And it ends up by saying, at the end of 28, you see, it says, V'noyach motza chein be'inei Hashem. Noyach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. That's it. There was Noach. We read about the birth of Noach. Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. Cut. End of parasha. Next parasha starts a whole new mice again with Noach. Eile told us Noach. These are the children of Noach. Shem Chom Yofes. Hashem comes to him and says, I'm going to bring a mabul, and then, yeah, the whole story of Noach. Why do we chop it up like that? Like, why do we have a little bit of Noach in Bereshis, and then the main story of Noach in Noach? If Noach's a new era, why don't we just have the whole Noach in Parshas Noach? Have Bereshis and Bereshis, first nine generations, and then start. 10th generation was Noach. People started to do bad things. Hashem wanted to describe, he came to Noach, I'm going to bring a mabul, build a teva. Right? Question one. The same thing happens at the end of Noach. Same thing, exactly the same thing. You have a look. At the end of Noach, we suddenly get introduced to Avraham Avinu. Really, Lech Lecha is the parasha of Avraham Avinu, but Noach is already born. Avraham Avinu is already born at the end of Noach. Right? You have a look on page 50. It says Pasuk Chavav, verse 26. It says Vayichi Sarach Shivim Shana, Terach lived 70 years. Vayol, and he gave birth to Avram, Nochar, and Hora, three sons. Then it says a whole thing, and then later on in Pasuk 29, it starts to tell us a bit of detail about Noach, about Avram Avinu. Vayikach Avram Nochar lehem Nashim. Avram Nochar married women. He married Sarah. Sarah couldn't have children. He was in Ur Kastim, and so on. And then again, cut. And suddenly, new parsha. In the middle of Avraham's life. Avraham is already 75, but it's a new parsha. Hashem said to Avraham, you got to go out, Lech Lecha. And then the whole parsha is a detailed description of what happens with Avraham. Lech Lecha and Bayera is all about Avraham Avinu and a bit of Yitzchak. Yeah? So why does it happen like that? Why is it divided that way? So one of the ideas is like this. The first 10 generations, we are taught, and the second 10 generations, and then Avraham Avinu, represent three different periods of creation. Not just different historic periods, but three periods. Let's go backwards. Avraham Avinu was the first Yid, we always call him the first Jew. We also know that from Avraham Avinu, the Gemara says that the world is divided into three times. It's six. The world is 6,000 years, six millennium. Shnei Alofim Toyu, the first two millennium are like chaos, and Shnei Alofim Toyu, the next two are Torah, and then the next two is a preparation for Mashiach, right? We say that from Avraham Avinu starts the stage two of existence, which is preparation for Matan Torah. So of course, the Jewish nation became a nation mainly at Matan Torah, but the preparation for Matan Torah begins with what we call the first Jew, Avraham Avinu. To break up a bit more, we know like this. We know that there are two ways in Kabbalah and in sort of esoteric writings, they talk about two ways that Hashem relates to us. One's called milamailo lamata. I'm going to explain this, from above to below. The other is milamata lamaila, from below to above. And then there's a combination of both. Let me explain. Sometimes Hashem relates to the world in a way where He does all the work. So He gives. People deserve, they don't deserve. He just gives. Right? Sometimes, the other way around, sometimes the people down here have to elevate themselves. They have to rise, so to speak. And then there's what we call a combination of both. And let me explain to you how this works. So let me give you an analogy. Okay? I've done this before with different things, but let me give you this analogy. Analogy of a teacher that teaches a student. So one way for a teacher to teach a student is to spoon feed the student. So you have teachers, if you have a capable student, the student's got a half a brain, it can understand things, sits there and it just absorbs knowledge, right? Can absorb a tremendous amount of knowledge. Can absorb knowledge that he or she cannot access on their own. But when it's told to them, they can absorb it, right? That's what we call milmaila lamata, from above to below. The student is there, the teacher spoon feeds. Then the teacher comes to the realization that's not good enough. Really, the ultimate goal is for the student to learn on their own, to learn the skill of learning, to learn the skill of discovering information. Right? So what does the teacher do? It holds back and says, okay, now you want to learn? I'll give you a bit of skills, I'll show you how. You try to do it on your own. So what happens is an amazing thing. Something happens that didn't happen before. The student starts to learn on his own, which is an amazing thing. It's now not just absorbing knowledge and being spoon-fed. The student is learning on his own, which is an amazing accomplishment. The problem with that is, then the whole curriculum slows down. Because the student cannot learn as much on his own as he could learn if it's spoon-fed to him. But the teacher says, no, but good, so let's go slower. But it's better, you should learn on your own. You should learn to learn on your own. Okay, so the student struggles. Understand, doesn't understand, though, yeah? I remember very clearly, this is a personal experience. When in high school, the teacher, we had a new Rebbe, and the teacher comes in one day and says, that's it, today you prepare the Gemara on your own. There's no art scrolls in those days, by the way. Right? The only thing that was available then, they had this big, thick dictionary called the Jastro. Those remember from Jastro, thick dictionary. It had all the Aramaic words, which you can hardly find, you had to know the root of the word. Suddenly we were thrown in the deep end, we opened up a Gemara and we're on our own. It took forever to figure out three lines. You got to work on the Jastro, you got to see, you argue, you get it right, you get it wrong. He says, on your own, when you're finished, I'll give you a shir, but on your own, right? So for a while we learned much slower, but we understood the value. Because the value was, we were learning how to do it on our own. What's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is the student gets to a stage where the student can learn on his own, but at the level and at the rate that the teacher could teach him. In other words, his skill becomes so good that he can now, on his own, access information as much or even more than the teacher spoon-fed him when he before he started learning on his own. Yeah, is that clear? I'll give you another, just a quick analogy that I didn't see written. It's one I just thought of, but it's the same idea. It happens with a baby, right? When you teach a baby to walk. So what happens when a baby first is born, they can't walk, so you put them in a carriage. When a baby's in a carriage, they get everywhere very quickly as you can walk. That's how quickly they get there, right? And then it comes a time where we start teaching a child to walk. What do? Child takes the first step. It's a big, big mazel tov. Everyone is happy, calls to the grandparents. It's unbelievable, right? What happens? A pain in the neck. Suddenly you can't get anywhere, right? Child gets up, walks, falls down. The mobility, the level of mobility is very, very weak. But the mile is the gewaldike, the mazel tov is the child's walk on their own. What's the tachli? What's the purpose? What's the goal? The goal is eventually this child learns to walk at the same rate and the same speed as he was when he was in the carriage and being pushed by his father or his mother. Yeah? Same three stages. Now all three stages are necessary because you can't really have one without the other. Right? You can't have stage two before stage one. Because you can't have a student learning to learn on their own before he was spoon-fed. Because he doesn't know what learning looks like. Doesn't know what he's trying to do. So stage one has to be spoon-feeding. Student teacher says, I'm just spoon-feeding you the knowledge. Stage two, now you know what I'm trying to teach you. Now you know what the subject looks like. Now try to figure it out on your own. Right? Say, I'm looking back, same thing. If we would be told to prepare a Gemara before we spoon-fed us, we wouldn't even know where to start. But because we learned Gemara for a couple of years, now we know at least what the Gemara looks like. So now we can try figure it out, right? But you got to also work on your own. And then eventually, you can be given the koyach to rise above what you can do and become as quick as what Hashem can give you, so to speak, or what the teacher can give you. This is what happened with the world. It says that for the first 10 generations, the world was completely operating on chesed. Complete chesed. Hashem was just giving. There was plenty of problems. There was plenty of people who started to do the wrong thing. Hashem didn't instantaneously punish them because the first part of the thing was chesed. Complete chesed. Hashem is doing it all for you. You deserve it. You don't deserve it. You should stay alive. You shouldn't stay alive. Hashem was just giving the whole world. Milamayla lamatas, we mean from above to below. Hashem was just giving his chesed to the world. Then suddenly what happens is Hashem switches it and says, no, okay, now you're on your own. Now you got to work it out. Now you got to deserve. Now you got to start trying to become better. That's a dangerous thing, dangerous stage. Part of the consequence of that stage was a mabul, a flood, because not everyone could do it. Some people could, some people couldn't. But Hashem wasn't giving chesed anymore. Hashem was standing back, saying, work it out on your own. But you're on your own. That's what happened with Noach. Now, that happened, that was Noach's period, but not right at the beginning. It's only when Hashem switched to that concept of bringing a Mabul, of asking Noach to build a Teva. So that's why Noach, the whole Bereshis, is Chesed, including the birth of Noach, including the first 500 years of Noach. The Mabul, by the way, only came when Noach was 600 years old. Right? You get birth, you get children, you get 500. First 500 years, Noach was just part of the other generation. It was part of the Chesed. That's why it's here. Yeah? Parshas Noach, not Noach himself, but Parshas Noach, is the second Kufa. It's the second period of Jewish history. Hashem says it's Gvur. Hashem says you're on your own now. Work it out on your own. The world's got to better itself. Noach tries a little bit, builds a tave of 120 years, doesn't do a great job of influencing everyone else, tries a little bit, does a little bit, he himself, his family at least. The Mabul comes. The Mabul also has certain positive aspects to it. It's a purification from the world. The world was becoming better. Whereas in the first 10 generations, Hashem was just giving to the world wasn't changing at all. We know that the Mabul was a bit of a mikveh that purified the world, elevated the world a little bit. Okay, the people died, but it elevated the world. And then Avraham Avinu. But for the first part of Avraham Avinu's life, he doesn't belong in Parshas Lech Lecha. He belongs in Noach. Why? Because for the first part of Avraham Avinu's life, he was still on his own, doing a good job of it, but still on his own. He connected and acknowledged Hashem on his own. Whatever he did was on his own, through his own limited powers. He was still the student. He was still battling, doing a good job, doing much better job in the previous 9 generations, but still part of Parshas Noach. That's why the first 75 years of Avraham Avinu, he isn't even the father of the Jewish nation yet. He's not even the first Yid. He's a great tzaddik. He's discovered monotheism. He's influencing other people better than Noach did. But he's not yet Avraham Avinu. He's not part of Jewish history yet. Still part of that second power where the student is just battling on his own. Comes Lech Lecha, starts a whole new period. Vayomer Hashem al Avram, Hashem says to Avram, Lech Lecha. Now that we've finished those two periods, I'm now going to give you the koyach to go to stage 3. And with stage 3, you can become the father of Klal Yisrael. Stage 3 is, you see, I missed that one part. With the student and the teacher, student and teacher at the end of the day are still within one context. When it comes to the way Hashem relates to us, when Hashem gives to the world, Hashem is infinite. So he gives infinite blessings. When the world is on its own, the world is very finite. Avraham Avinu is describing Hashem in a finite way. What the third stage represents in terms of our relationship with Hashem is the combination of infinity and finiteness. In other words, it's the finite person accessing infinity, like the student who now learns like the teacher. But it's even a bigger chiddush when it talks about the relationship between us and Hashem. If we, the student, and Hashem is the teacher, that is a greater chiddush, because we're talking about the student and the teacher are not both infinite. They're both finite. They're both just one's cleverer than the other. So eventually the student reaches the level of the teacher. With us, it's an unbelievable chiddush, because it's the student reaching the level of the teacher. It's the infinite person accessing it's the finite person accessing the infinity of Hashem. That's the third stage. And that you need a special koyach to do that. And that's why Avraham Avinu, after he'd gone through the second stage, in the first 75 years, after he'd been part of Noach, the Parshas Noach, now starts Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha is a whole new stage. Lech Lecha is the birth of Jewishness. What is Jewishness? Jewishness is the combination of the infinite and the finite. Jewishness is living in this world and revealing Hashem's infinity in this world, making the world a place that can facilitate the revelation of Hashem, the infinite revelation of Hashem, not just what we can do on our own, but we can facilitate something, making a world where we can facilitate something much greater than ourselves. That's Avraham Avinu, and that's Lech Lecha, and that's where Avraham Avinu becomes the father of Klal Yisrael, and that starts a new period. That's why Parashat Lech Lecha starts with the first mitzvah that he was given, where he's upgraded to a whole new level, where the person can elevate themselves but access something which human beings cannot really elevate on their own, which is the infinite presence of Hashem, and that's the birth of the Jewish nation, and that's the beginning of Lech Lecha. Good.
he learned.